This is a BMC Academy production.
Hello, and welcome to BMC's Health Podcast, your go-to space for health, wellness, and everything in between. I'm your host, Daisy Banda, and today we're diving into a topic that affects so many of us, joint health. Whether it's stiffness in the morning, discomfort after a long day at work, or chronic pain that just won't go away, joint issues can impact our quality of life in big ways. That's why I'm thrilled to be joined by a special guest from Arasti, our trusted provider who's been helping employees find relief and restore mobility through their unique approach to musculoskeletal care. Hi, Dr. Doug Gorey.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here. Thank you all so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. I'd like to go into a topic with just talking about general joint health. You know, what are the common causes of joint pain among working adults today?
There are several causes. When we look at things like diagnoses that can cause joint pain, probably one of the most common, and I would say the most common among working adults and adults in general, is what we call osteoarthritis. There are different types of arthritis, but osteoarthritis specifically is the one that we hear about the most. And most of us will get to some degree at some point in our lifetime. It's essentially kind of the wear and tear that happens in joints. And that can happen in people who live a sedentary lifestyle because their joints don't get the movement that they need. Joints in general need movement. They crave movement. They like the load, so to speak. So it's good to give our joints movement. And we'll get to more of that, you know, later on with some of the other questions that I think you have for me. But in general, osteoarthritis is something that can affect people who move too little, or if they move too much through a certain area, and that area, those joints are not willing to accept that load. They're kind of intolerant to that load, if that makes sense. It can be kind of fall into that overuse category as well. Other types of overuse or repetitive type injuries or joint pains would include like repetitive strains or soft tissue injuries that can include things like tendonitis in the working adult, you know, like knee pain that you feel when you get up after sitting for a long period of time. Oftentimes that can be some form of tendonitis or again, some form of arthritis like we previously discussed. Same with hand and wrist issues from sitting at a computer or being on the mouse for, you know, too long, or kind of that tension or chronic neck pain that can devolve into headaches, those kinds of things. And so again, kind of going back to a sedentary lifestyle, but, you know, between the osteoarthritis and the repetitive strains and soft tissue injuries, those will make up the bulk of them. Now, there are other things like, you know, previous injuries that maybe never got taken care of that can cause somebody pain. Whether it's, you know, they threw out their lower back when, you know, bathing the dog years ago, and now it bothers them when sitting for long periods of time, or whatever the case is. And then there are other things like inflammatory conditions, things like inflammatory arthropathies, different types of arthritis that aren't osteoarthritis, but do cause joint pain as well. Things like gout, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and the like. And those can affect people of all ages. There's different age groups, I guess, that those affect. But those would be the most common ones as far as causes of joint pain amongst working adults.
Yeah, when you had mentioned, it almost feels like you have to have a balance of like moving and not overdoing it. And there was one time where I heard, because I enjoy moving and doing my workouts. And when I think about it, I heard someone say, you know, movement is like conditioner for your body, right? And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And so I know whenever we do work out or start moving for the betterment of ourselves, sometimes we can have some kind of soreness. And sometimes I know I've done it before where I don't think I lifted my weights right. Now I feel like a backache. So how do we differentiate between normal soreness and a joint issue that needs medical attention?
That's a great question. And kind of towards that principle of movement, you know, I tell my patients all the time, motion is lotion when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, you know, similar to what you were talking about, movement is like conditioner for the body. It totally is. Let me talk a little bit more about like the joints and how they like movement, and it may make a little bit more sense as to how we differentiate between normal soreness and something that we may need to like see a doctor for, or something that may be indicative of an injury or something that we need, you know, to be more mindful of. So most of the joints within the body, the ones that kind of undergo this process of osteoarthritis, are what we call synovial joints. They're wrapped in a capsule, a joint capsule, and within that capsule is synovial fluid. And that fluid is what contains a lot of the nutrients and things that our joints need to maintain. There's cartilage within the joint, but what the cartilage is made up primarily of collagen, specifically type 2 collagen, which we'll get to in a little bit more. But that collagen within the joint capsule and within the cartilage of the joint itself, it likes to have movement put into it. So that's that load principle that we talked about. And the more we move a joint and kind of pump it through its range of motion, take a knee, for example. If a knee stays stiff for a long, long period of time, then that knee is not getting the nutrients that it needs because it's not able to move and pump that synovial fluid within and throughout the joint. So the joint becomes undernutritioned or doesn't get the nutrients that it needs. And so with that being said, it's also worth mentioning that the cartilage within a knee joint, for example, like the meniscus is a primary piece of cartilage between the knee joint, doesn't have a great blood supply. And so again, the more we get movement, the more we encourage proper fluid dynamics within that knee so that it gets the nutrients that it needs. Now, let's say there's a pre-existing injury, or let's say we overdo it. Let's say we move it too much before that knee is ready to take on that kind of movement. Let's, you know, kind of the classic couch to 5K scenario for someone who, in the true sense, has done absolutely nothing for years and tries to run a 5K. If it's in too short period of time and we increase that training load, that training volume too soon or too rapidly, then a lot of times we'll undergo like some specific pains on the joints. Like normal soreness would be that you say you go for a run, it's the first time you've run for a while, or even just a walk or hit the elliptical or stair climber or Stairmaster. Or let's say you do a little bit of weight training. Normal soreness would be more widespread, would follow some bout of activity that's new to you, right? So again, the first, you know, walk / jog that you do after a few years of maybe taking some maternity leave or paternity leave, and or maybe being just in a really deep season of work where you're not focusing on your physical health so much and you've been focusing more on your work and your career, or maybe you've got some other things that have kept you from being able to prioritize movement in your life, and you endure some new activity, and then you're just kind of like you have that widespread, usually bilateral, meaning on both sides, kind of soreness that gets better with other gentle movements, like maybe just like a rest or recovery day that includes some stretching. If stretching usually makes it better, then it's usually more of a soreness issue and not an injury issue. If you do have some soreness, like on the knees, for example, after a walk / jog, and it's the first one that you've done in a while, and you're like, man, I don't know if I've got bad knees or if it's just regular soreness. If it's pretty even on both sides and there's no sense of instability or swelling or any warmth to the joint or anything like that, then you're probably in the clear and it's probably more just normal soreness. You know, give it a day or so. Usually it will fade in, you know, 24 to 72 hours, 1 to 3 days, and then you can, you know, go back to doing the things that you want to be doing. Now, on the other hand, if you have a knee, say in that same example, that is more painful than the other one, so if it's more one-sided or more isolated to a certain area, if it doesn't get better over the course of a day or two, if it does seem like there's some swelling or some warmth in that area, like if it feels a little bit warmer to the touch, or if there's some redness or anything like that, certainly that's something to be more mindful of and could indicate a joint problem in that area. Or if it feels like it's unstable, like it's going to give way when you go up and down stairs, for example, or if there's like some popping and clicking that's, you know, kind of outside of the normal popping and clicking that most of us feel as we get a little bit older and as we start moving our joints again, it's kind of normal to feel some pops and clicks. But if it's especially if it's a painful pop or a click, or if it feels like it gets locked up, those are things that you need to be more mindful of. So, you know, the normal soreness being more just kind of widespread, both sides, goes away pretty quickly with stretching. And then if it's more isolated to an area, especially if that area has any other kind of physical findings like warmth, swelling, redness, if it doesn't go away, you know, more quickly, then you may have more, you know, an indication that you've got more of a joint problem.
Yeah, that's good to know the differences and what lifestyle habits could help with long-term joint health.
And so this is where I really kind of like start nerding out on, and apologize if I get long-winded on this one, because this is where I'll go back to that loading principle, and we'll talk a little bit more about osteoarthritis in general, because again, it's just so common in the repetitive stress and strain injuries, like tendonitis and things like that. But in short, if I can just encourage everyone to see the process through which this all happens is both mechanical and biochemical. So going back to osteoarthritis, certainly there's a mechanical component, meaning the actual mechanics of the joint, the movement, the mechanical movement at the joint. But then going a little bit deeper into how that synovial fluid gets into those areas, how stiffness in the joint can lead to lack of mobility. When we have a lack of mobility, then we move less and less, so we can't accept that load. Now, what can exacerbate all of that is the biochemical component, because again, there's not just a mechanical payoff for the movement. There's biochemical consequences as well. When we don't move, we tend to have poor glucose tolerance. So when we eat a meal, for example, our glucose may spike a bit higher and stay spiked a bit longer if we don't move. So movement even postprandially or after we eat is very important for glucose control. If you magnify that to the sedentary lifestyle, and now we have a population, many of us fall into or have fallen into at some points in our lives, when we're not getting that movement, then all of a sudden we have a bit higher, just systemic, higher levels of inflammatory markers, cytokines, things like that, basically chemical mediators that don't allow our tissues to repair well, that kind of lend towards chronic inflammation in areas of our bodies, whether that be our lower back or our neck or our wrists or our elbows or our shoulders or our knees or whatever. And so you have the biochemical component as well. And so when it comes to lifestyle habits, really the two main things that I kind of like, well, I guess kind of subhead this with is regular movement, exercise of some kind, stretching, mobility work, things like that. But then also adequate nutrition and avoiding basically pro-inflammatory things and clinging more towards anti-inflammatory things. And I can expand on that if you'd like. The research as we know it so far, when it comes to the regular movement and the exercise, various types of exercise and movement are helpful. Again, going back to if you're doing a couch to 5K type of program, you're gonna want to be able to make sure you can tolerate walking, maybe hitting the elliptical for a bit, build up your cardiovascular base a little bit doing that before you can just get right into running most of the time. Right. Now, you want to start with, you know, maybe low impact things like that, like walking, the elliptical, like I said, cycling, swimming, things like that. But as you can tolerate that more and more and more, then you can kind of move yourself along the spectrum to a little bit more intense work, like running or jogging, or mixing up the two a little bit, maybe doing some strength training. Strength training in general is very helpful, because the resistance that you get from weights, the mechanical resistance, builds not only good movement patterns, or can build good movement patterns through your joints, especially if you have a good trainer who's going to show you how to lift properly and do the movements correctly. But you're building your muscles, obviously, right? So that's kind of the whole idea. The muscles, one of their main goals is to support the joints and to make sure that the joints aren't taking on the full load of a certain movement, and that you can achieve a movement in a way that's biomechanically efficient and not going to put too much stress or strain through those joints. So resistance training becomes really important because it benefits not only the movement at the joint level itself, but everything that kind of crosses over that joint, like the musculature, that's going to bring long-term strength and stability. Now, that kind of segues into the added benefit of some of the, going back to the biochemical component, the more lean muscle mass that we have through strength training and other activities, usually the better off we are in terms of tolerating or having better glucose control. And so again, our body is not so prone or susceptible to high inflammatory markers. So to kind of juxtapose the two, you have the sedentary individual who isn't getting the kind of movement that they need or that their body's craving. And so they tend to have higher levels of inflammatory markers. Their joints are stiff. Their muscles are not pliable. They don't have any kind of mobility. I mean, they have some, obviously, but they haven't strengthened or lengthened their physiological envelope, so to speak. So they're very limited in what movements they can do. And then whenever they do certain movements, they tend to feel a bit more sore more readily because of those higher inflammatory markers. And that's okay. That's normal. You're going to feel some of that soreness. Because you have to start somewhere if you're kind of in that camp. But then if you have, you know, the opposite of that, to contrast that with somebody who regularly stretches, maybe does yoga on a regular basis, or Pilates, just low impact type stuff like that, that's moving your body through different ranges of motion. You're getting different, you're trying to maximize your range of motion at different joints. You're trying to elongate muscles. And then you're sprinkling in some cardiovascular training and some strength exercises. Then you've got somebody who is kind of overall bulletproofed in a sense against some of the things that we've talked about that can lead towards chronic joint pains like osteoarthritis. Because not only are their bodies mechanically more fit and ready to take on that mechanical stress and load, but biochemically, their bodies are also doing a better job of, in a sense, clearing out the bad and addressing some of the inflammatory things that can occur within our bodies when we get sick or whatever, but also bringing in those good nutrients that we talked about through that movement into the joints, through that synovial fluid that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I loved when you talked about low impact cardio, because that's something that I really enjoy doing. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. You do break quite a bit of a sweat, but you don't put so much strain on your joints. And just to kind of add a little something for us, everyone who's listening, all of our BMCers, we're going to have a virtual fitness class. It's called Low Impact Cardio on October 30th at 9 a.m. So be on the lookout for an invitation on that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have it recorded so those that can't attend can look at it, or maybe want to do the workout again. So looking forward to that. Going over to workplace ergonomics or stress, you know, obviously we are a tech company. We're going to be sitting down a lot. The good thing about BMC is that when you're in the office, all of our desks are automatically, you can stand it up if you wish, or you can, you know, sit it back down. But we do have a lot of remote employees that are remote full-time. I know as for me, I'm hybrid. When I'm at home, I have a standing desk. So that way I can kind of like alternate, because there are times where you do get tired of standing up or sitting down. So just to kind of give the body, like you mentioned, that movement. But talking about workplace and office place, what are the more problematic issues for specific joints with that?
The main thing that we see the most in clinic, and I think probably one of the most common things that people endure, is low back pain. And if they've got a standing desk, then that's certainly something that can help. Usually what we found, though, sitting for too long is problematic. Standing for too long can be problematic. And so mixing it up between the two. Like I've got a sit-stand desk here at my office as well. Now, in between patients, obviously, I'm working on patients. I'm standing next to them and working on them. But sometimes I sit and work on them. And then when I'm at my desk doing computer work, I'm either sitting or standing, but I'm usually mixing it up throughout the day. So that can help. And as someone who's experienced acute lower back pain in my own life, you know, that's something that helps my lower back stay happy. So low back is a primary one. Neck and shoulder pain, that classic staring at one monitor for too long and then going to look at the other one. And it's like, oof, man, my neck is kind of tight and stiff. Like I've been in that position for a little bit too long. That's just your body telling you that you need a little bit more movement through there. We need a little bit more kind of symmetry through the neck, maybe a little bit more strength and stability so that you can tolerate that position for longer. So those would be the two most common, you know, low back and, you know, neck kind of shoulder, upper shoulder area, like upper trap, upper back stuff. But other classic examples, you know, hand and wrist pain, whether it's a tendonitis or carpal tunnel syndrome or something along those lines from typing or being on a mouse, especially if it's, you know, maybe not an ergonomic mouse or maybe it's too far away and your shoulder gets really tight and stiff, you know. So just like kind of addressing, I hate to use the word alignment, but kind of the postural alignment that you're in throughout the day, you know, stacking your spine upright and not slouching and those kinds of things that can lead towards some of those pains in the upper body. And then again, back to lower back, obviously with lower back pain, or maybe not so obviously, but hip pain tightness is something that is very common, especially if you've been sitting for long periods of time, hip flexors get really tight. So stretching those hip flexors out periodically can be just wildly helpful in terms of your lower back. Again, going back to some of the knee stuff we discussed, if your knees are bent in kind of the same position for too long and you develop some stiffness in those joints, then it's not uncommon to experience that classic, what we call moviegoer knee, where you stand up and you feel some of that pain underneath there. It could be, again, some cartilaginous issues or just some tendinopathy that's affecting the knee joint. But those are very common things that can affect tech workers, especially if you're at a desk for long periods of time. Other ones that I see pretty often, elbow issues, specifically like outer elbow pain, oftentimes what we call tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis, epicondylopathy. It's not just from tennis, though. It can affect, like I said, everyone. But really, more of my patients who have that are probably not playing tennis. It's from something else, you know, oftentimes from being on the computer or what have you. And Daisy, I don't know if this is a good time. There's a couple things that I may want to add to the lifestyle habits, if we want to go back to that here in a moment. Like I said, kind of breaking that down under the subheadings of the mechanical and biochemical approaches. Within that biochemical, some things that I didn't address that I think is worth mentioning with adequate nutrition. So, you know, I mentioned avoiding pro-inflammatory things, you know, things that are high in sugar, processed carbs in general. If it comes in a wrapper, there's a good chance it's been heavily processed. And that's just the convenience of eating on the go and doing things. I mean, I'm suspect of that as well, or subject to that as well, rather. But eating whole foods as much as we can. So choosing an apple or a banana over a wrapped candy bar is going to do a world of good. Lots of colorful fruits and vegetables in our diet. If you eat meat, then, you know, lean meat. If you're omnivorous, then something like fish can be really helpful because of the high content of omega-3 fatty acids, which are more anti-inflammatory than pro-inflammatory, or supplementing with things like fish oils. There's also good evidence to support taking supplements like collagen. And specifically for joints, I talked about this, the type of collagen that's primarily within our cartilage and within our joints is type 2 collagen. And there's different types of collagen supplements. There's really two main types. You can either take what's called hydrolyzed collagen type 2, which is basically just collagen peptides. So think of like protein specific for the collagen. And then there's undenatured or native type 2 collagen, which is essentially, the way it works is a little bit different. It basically tells your body to not break down the collagen in your joints as much. Like it exposes collagen in the gut so that your gut recognizes that it's like a good thing and doesn't go and want to break it down from somewhere else, if that makes sense. So it's kind of a protective against some of that longstanding inflammation that we talk about that can degrade the cartilage within joints. So that can be helpful. Things like curcumin and glucosamine chondroitin supplements do show some evidence. There's some mixed evidence on the glucosamine chondroitin, but many patients of mine, you know, swear that it helps them. Magnesium supplementation can be helpful. Vitamin D supplementation can be very helpful, especially if we don't get out and get the adequate amount of sunlight that we need. Sunlight in general, I think, is helpful because going back to the biochemical components, when we get adequate amounts of sunlight and vitamin D, then our bodies are being regulated against kind of that chronic stress and some of those biochemical markers that can elevate when we're more sedentary. It can regulate our sleep patterns a little bit more. And so, you know, that's something that's also wildly helpful, is getting adequate sleep. That's whenever our tissues really repair. So let's say, you know, going back to the example of doing a couch to 5K kind of program, if you're not getting adequate sleep, then your body is not repairing itself in between workout days. And so adequate sleep is a huge line of defense against chronic joint pain. And then the other thing that I had listed under that, which we had already talked about or started talking about, is proper work ergonomics or ergonomics throughout the day, whether we're sitting and driving most of the day, sitting at a computer, working on patients, if we have a more manual job, all of those things, you know, need to be accounted for when we're going about our day. We need to make sure that we're treating our bodies well through those movements. And lastly on that, when it comes to nutritional things, avoiding things like smoking and nicotine use, just because nicotine especially, and more so through obviously the toxins that smoking introduces, but nicotine in general, does have a vasoconstrictive effect. So it kind of closes down the arteries that are delivering some of those nutrients to our joints. And so that also will slow tissue repair and make it a little bit harder to overcome injuries if we have a repeated type stress or strain injury to our soft tissues, or if it's more of the arthritic type that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, love all of that. Love all the nutrition approach. It's so good. Going over to a raw C's unique approach, I know I've been a long time ago, have some people in the office that have said really good things, but it's really different from physical therapy and chiropractic care. So for those who haven't been yet, could you explain the treatment and why it differs between traditional care?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I get this question all the time. This is actually one I didn't take any notes on or really feel like I needed to do any research on, because I feel like a broken record half the time explaining this. At Erosti, so Erosti Rehab Centers primarily employs chiropractors to do what I do. That's what I am. I'm a doctor of chiropractic, but we also employ doctors of physical therapy. And so even in that, you can see that we kind of blur the lines between what most people think when they hear traditional chiropractic or traditional physical therapy. It's kind of a niche of its own. And not that we're trying to replace either one of those things, because many times there's something that a patient needs that I know they'll get that specific thing with long-term physical therapy or traditional PT approach. Or maybe they need to be unloaded for a bit and be in the water doing some certain exercises. So I'll refer them out for some aquatic therapy, or maybe they need some pelvic floor therapy and we don't do that here, so I'll refer them out to do some pelvic floor therapy. Or maybe they've got a really hot lower back that's not responding to some of the work that we do, which I'll get more to in a second because I know that's the heart of your question, and I'll refer them out to do some decompression with a local chiropractor that I know, or things like that. Our approach is to go back to some of those things that can lead to injury and try to work on those things, right? So when we have a patient who, let's say we take that same example of person who's gone couch to 5K, they all of a sudden have some knee pain that's not going away. And it's more on the right than the left knee, but both knees are affected. Certainly it's more noticeable on one side. And as we take a look at what's going on, what I'm going to do with a patient is I'm just going to see how they move through space. I'm going to have them move through different functional movements like a squat, a lunge. I may have them go up or down a step, stool, or stairs, especially if they're complaining of pain with ascending or descending stairs. And I'm going to be looking for certain movement patterns that are indicative of muscle imbalances, going back to the mechanical load principle, that could be causing overload or almost overuse to that area, okay? So a lot of times with knee case, for example, patients have weak hips, and a lot of times that's because of tightness in the hips. So again, we take that same patient who is going couch to 5K, well, they've been sedentary for so long, their hips are really tight. When hips are tight, when muscles are tight, they're not prone to engage and to actually stabilize when we need them to stabilize. Like the brain to muscle connection just isn't quite firing the way that it needs to. And so our approach is to get in there and work on a lot of those imbalances, work on the muscle tightness that's leading to that. Let's say they've got some tightness through their hips and glutes and hip flexors, and maybe through their quads throughout the front of their leg, and maybe the adductors, which is like the inner part of their leg. And so those are going to be some areas that I'm going to go in and I'm going to use my thumbs and really try to work out some of that tension, some of that tightness, and really try to reconnect that brain to muscle connection. And then we're going to give them some exercises that are specific to their case Let's say, you know, kind of the classic example of the knee case is that usually there's some weakness throughout their quads and their glutes, or maybe some imbalance between glutes, quads, and hamstrings. And so I'm going to work on those things. And then we're going to show them ways to do that at home, because there's simple tips and tricks that most of us can be doing to help, you know, start feeling better if there is a problem, or prevent feeling better, going back to the mobility stuff, you know, regular yoga, stretching, things like that, but also things like foam rolling, self-myofascial release work, like using a foam roller to work through those same muscles. And so the patient would be with me for 30 minutes getting that hands-on work after the exam. And then for the second 30 minutes of the appointment, they would be with my rehab specialist doing exercises specific to their case. Again, for the knee, maybe doing some strengthening exercises for the hip, doing some stretches for the hip so that those hips can start opening up and we can build that connection a little bit more between the brain and the hips and the stability that that person's going to need when getting back into their running and things like that. Maybe we'll start training some single leg balance work. That's something that I love, especially for runners, because that's essentially what running is, you know, being able to tolerate a single leg stance, being very stable, and then being able to go to the next foot and then the next foot and, you know, and over and over and over back and forth. You're just alternating from one single leg stance to the other. And if there's a breakdown in that movement pattern, then we're going to try to work on building that up. Traditional physical therapy will do that as well. A lot of times they won't employ some of the hands-on work that we do. Many physical therapists are getting to that point, which is how, you know, Erosity is starting to hire more physical therapists to do what I do, to do more of the manual therapy. And so you'll see, again, kind of those lines blurred a bit, but getting those basically muscles to, you know, switch back on, for lack of better terminology, and then working those muscles through the second half of the appointment so that patients can get that, regain that movement pattern, regain that stability, regain that balance that they need so that it helps prevent them from, you know, having worsening pain and helps improve their current condition.
Yeah. So it sounds with some detail, like the differences between traditional care and what Erosity does, and how quickly, if you could explain, you know, those that haven't been, how quickly do patients usually see results and what conditions respond best to Erosity therapy?
So that's a good question. It's something I kind of missed on the different differentiating things. Traditional PT, kind of a classic, say you go see an orthopedist for a shoulder problem. And he's like, go do physical therapy. Here's an order for 6 weeks of physical therapy. Initially, it may be 3 times a week for 3 weeks, and then 2 times a week for 3 weeks. And then provided you're meeting some of the functional goals at that point, they may discharge you, or they may tell the ortho that you need longer. But that's 6 weeks. And again, that's 2 to 3 times a week for 6 weeks. We try to expedite that process quite a bit. More often than not, our patients are getting in and out and basically back to the life they love living in 3 to 4 visits. That's a classic average. Depending on the severity of the issue, it can be anywhere from 2 to 5. So I'll kind of broaden that range out. But we're talking 2 to 5 visits versus, you know, 12 or however many over the course of a 6 week period, whether you're going two to three times. And not all cases respond that way. Of course, the best cases that respond, our low back pain is our bread and butter, neck pain, neck and shoulder pain, mid back pain, elbow pain can be hit or miss. Lateral epicondylitis, like I mentioned earlier, like the tennis elbow, is a very stubborn condition anyway. Regardless of where you go for that, most anywhere, especially like an orthopedist, will be like, oh, I hate these. You know, let's go see physical therapy for a while and see if that makes it better. A lot of times it will make some progress. I would say that aside from doing something like shockwave, which Erosity is actually starting to do as well, shockwave therapy is extracorporeal shockwave therapy. It basically, it's an actual like mechanical shockwave, or think of like a sound wave almost, that's produced that breaks up some of the ground substance, some of the bad stuff within the tendon that's hurting. And so that it can kind of get flushed out. That in conjunction with some of the manual therapy and exercises that we do shows really great results. But in short, most patients are seeing us, say someone throws their back out loading the dishwasher and they're able to get in to see me. Say they do that today and I'm able to squeeze them in tomorrow for an appointment. More often than not, by next week, they're already doing 50 to 60% better. From there, it's just a matter of kind of rebuilding some of the strength and stability that they may need in their core, loosening up through their hips so that they can help bulletproof themselves from it happening again and help their body kind of heal through this initial injury. Again, usually at that point, it's usually, say, 2 more appointments after that. And by that third or fourth visit, they're back to doing pretty much everything they were doing beforehand. You know, they can play with their kids, they can work throughout the day, they can get in and out of the car, they can sleep without pain again. And at that point, if we've kind of addressed all of their treatment goals, then I'm going to just discharge them. So what could have taken much longer, we've got, you know, pretty much handled within about 2 weeks if we're able to get them in and in a short enough period of time.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I imagine that you probably send patients with, you know, some like aftercare, what you need to do or recommendations to do at home to prevent anything further or to prevent, you know, that back pain again. So what are some things that Arasti, what do y'all do to help people continue their recovery at home?
Great question. So through the second half of the appointment that I mentioned, working with like my rehab specialist, and then as I've outlined some of the stuff with patients, like where some of their, you know, imbalances are, and trying to educate, hey, these are things that you'll want to kind of be mindful of. We try to empower them with things like foam rolling, use of a lacrosse ball to kind of do some self trigger point work on their own. If they do start to develop any tension or something like that, that they can be aware of and basically head it off before it becomes something worse. And then really on the preventative side is the education piece, going back to what I mentioned earlier, is just building in some of those movements that our body's craving. Let's take that lower back example. Let's say the acuity of the lower back pain is much better after even the first appointment. Now it's a matter of addressing, okay, what got us here? What are some things that we need to be mindful of as you move forward throughout your life? Because we're going to send you back out into that world that kind of created this pain to begin with. What are some things that we need to be mindful of? More often than not, again, it's tightness through the hips, maybe some weakness through their core stabilizers, weakness in some of their hip stabilizers, like their glutes. And so we're going to really try to bolster up with simple exercises that they can actually do and perform just on their own at home, not anything that they're going to need to necessarily go to a gym for. If they want to, fantastic. If they want to bridge that gap between some basic core exercises that we're going to show them and some hip stretches, and then maybe some lacrosse ball work to work out some of the knots that may come up along the way. If they want to bridge that gap from doing some of that stuff into doing things more like lunges or squats or deadlifts, fantastic. If they have any questions on that, I'll usually try to get them in with like a personal trainer or someone who can show them those things. But on our end, we're going to try to equip them with the tools that they need. Usually what I tell patients is by the time that third or fourth appointment rolls around, if they're doing much better like we anticipate and they're ready for discharge, I'll let them know that they've got the tools in their toolkit to address these issues. We'll go over what that looks like. I mean, a good example, I'll use myself as an example. I woke up this morning to work out and I had some tightness throughout my hips and my lower back. I went for a run last night and I kind of did like a little bit of sprinting. And so I attribute it to that because I haven't sprinted a whole lot. So going back to that load principle, I'm trying to get better at sprinting. And so I'm slowly doing more sprinting. Last night was an example where I did some sprinting. This morning I woke up and my lower back was a little bit achy. Again, I told you I have some lower back issues. Now I could choose to just not work out that day. Or with the knowledge that I have and with the knowledge that I'm hoping to impart to my patients is, okay, my hips are a little bit stiff. I've got some trigger points through my glutes and my lower back. And so I'm going to hop on the lacrosse ball a bit and kind of roll those out, kind of release some of that tension so that I can get into the gym and do the movements that I need to do, do a proper warm up. Was able to get through all of my lifts today without any issues. And even over the last 40 minutes, and I'm sitting currently at my desk today, this morning. I'll raise it here in a moment whenever my first few patients get in. But my back feels just fine, right? And so being able to apply those tools, so it's not just the tools, but it's the education to apply those tools appropriately that we're trying to give our patients.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, I learned a whole lot today. Thank you so much for being here. I do want to just let everyone know, for anyone who would like to visit an Arasti facility or a virtual appointment, please visit arasti.com/BMC software. Thank you, doctor.
Yeah, thank you, Daisy. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I hope this was helpful for your listeners and for your employees. If y'all have any other questions, feel free to reach out to myself or Whitney, and we'll be happy to help.
Will do.
Struggling with muscle or joint pain? Whether it's your back, neck, shoulder, knee, or more, Erosti is here to help you fix pain fast. With in-clinic and virtual care options, Erosti's expert providers get to the root cause of your pain. Delivering targeted treatment that relieves pain quickly, restores mobility, and boosts your overall physical well-being. You'll get a thorough assessment, hands-on manual therapy, and a personalized rehab plan. All part of your in-network benefits. Scheduling is easy. You can do it online, by phone, or through the Erosti app. With appointments often available in just 24 to 48 hours. Don't let pain slow you down. Log in to Erosti.com or call 800-404-6050 to schedule your appointment today.
This is a BMC Academy production.
Now we're going to shine a light on a benefit that could truly change lives. Cancer is a journey no one wants to take, but when it touches our lives or the lives of our loved ones, having the right support can make all the difference. That's where Access Help comes in. This incredible resource is available to our employees and their families, offering expert guidance and compassionate support, all designed to help navigate the complexities of cancer. Hi, Bob. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Great. I want to start about understanding Access Hope. I feel like many of our employees do not know what that is. So if you could start by telling us what Access Hope is and what inspired its creation.
Absolutely. So Access Hope was born in 2019 out of the City of Hope, which is a world-renowned comprehensive cancer center based out of Southern California. The idea behind Access Hope was that patients and their treating oncologists should have access to the top-tier research and approaches to cancer care regardless of where they're located. We always talk about your health should not be dictated by your zip code. So cancer knowledge in the U.S. doubles about every 73 days, and it's really difficult for those treating oncologists to keep up with the newest evidence-based research. Couple that with seeing 30 to 50 patients in a given week, all with their own unique cancer diagnosis, it can be nearly impossible for a local oncologist to keep up with the best and greatest. So since our inception, we actually found 6 additional comprehensive cancer centers across the U.S. that share in our mission of really democratizing cancer care. And to put that slightly different, it's how can we take the knowledge from these facilities and bring it to the masses regardless of their zip code?
Yeah, that's great because it almost feels like you don't have to travel anywhere. You can stay where you're at and you can access the best of the best, the most innovative. So that's really good to hear. And how does Access Help differ from traditional cancer care or support services?
Yeah, excellent question. So we specifically rely upon subspecial oncologists at each of these facilities that are really at the top of their game in their particular field. These are the professionals who dedicate 80 to 90% of their week to research and the newest therapeutics in the fight against cancer. The other 10% of the time, they're actually tending to their own patients. So these are the experts that are really at the forefront of the newest, best, greatest type of cancer research and therapeutics, which means they are the experts really at each subspecial level. And kind of what you just mentioned a second ago about maintaining that local treatment, we do understand the importance of remaining local for treatment. So friends, family, and patients desperately need to have their support system in place. We're able to share the cutting-edge cancer knowledge with those local oncologists at the local level to ensure that everyone gets an equal opportunity in the fight against cancer, again, regardless of their zip code.
I love that. So what types of cancers does Access Hope support, and are there any limitations?
So as long as we have a subspecialist at one of our partners, we're able to cover all cancer types at any stage at any time. And oftentimes we may see a cancer get aggressive or change from the initial review that we'll do. So we're also able to help individuals that have had a kind of differential in their initial diagnosis, and we can give them another report and kind of review later on as well. Again, it comes down to any type of cancer at any time, as long as we have that subspecialist. And typically we'll rely upon our geographic partners. So for individuals that might reside in Texas, we would leverage the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center outside of Dallas. But let's say that they do not have a subspecialist for a particular cancer type. we'll then pivot to one of our other partners like a Dana-Farber or a Johns Hopkins who may have that particular specialty on Steph. And whether members at the early stages of their diagnosis or just recently found out that they unfortunately have cancer, even to those who've been receiving long-term care, we can assist in the diagnosis and treatment plan really at any stage of their journey.
Yeah, and how does it work? So if there's someone that, like you mentioned, just started a diagnosis or has been diagnosed for some time, how does an employee or their family member get started with Access Help?
Yeah, so we love our partnership with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. My first thing to say to is flip over that little Blue Cross Blue Shield ID card. We've all seen commercials on TV, and there's a care management number on the back. They'll be able to help really get the process started, make sure that this is the right fit for an individual that's seeking out a second opinion. It's really a seamless process and assures that the members are really covered before they're warm transferred to Access Hope. And from there, we'll really take on the burden of procuring medical records, of assigning a subspecialist, of really getting all the diagnostics transferred over. And within 5 to 7 business days, once we have all those records, we'll be able to send back a completed report. For those who are not listening to the podcast, or maybe just will forget about it when the time comes that they need a program like this, Blue Cross also does have a proactive outreach when their cancer claims are processed. So what this includes is digital outreach. So think email, telephonic. They may be calling to kind of create an educational awareness that this program is available. And if all else fails, there will be a direct mail as well. And don't worry, the approach that they take is very cognizant of the privacy around a cancer diagnosis. So they'll be sensitive to each patient's situation.
Yes. So everyone out there listening to this, you know, when you see that Blue Cross Blue Shield number on your cell phone, you know, it's Blue Cross reaching out. So there's many times where, you know, they think it's spam or it's not a number they want to answer. So yeah, it's Blue Cross trying to help out. So is there a cost for employees to use Access Hope services?
There is no cost to any employee that uses our services. So BMC understands the importance of helping employees in their cancer journey and really added our programs at no additional cost to the employee and their eligible dependents. Whether getting a second opinion on treatment or really looking for day-to-day support with a dedicated oncology nurse through our cancer support team, there's no out-of-pocket cost associated.
Great. That's good to hear that it's cost-free. And going back to, I know you spoke a little bit about this, about the specialists and experts that Access Hope provides, but if you can go a little bit more detail on what kind of experts are involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, we're only leveraging the best and the brightest in their particular field of cancer care. What separates us from any other cancer care program out there is that we're always working with a comprehensive cancer center that's been designated by the National Cancer Institute as a top facility in the United States. Some of the cancer centers that you might be familiar with that our program actually partners with would be the City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center in Southern California, which is actually our namesake, as I mentioned earlier, the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center outside of Dallas. That's our newest foundational partner. They really treat a big geographic region in the South and Southwest area for us. And then a few of the other names that you might recognize would be Johns Hopkins out in Maryland, and also Dana-Farber, which is a world-renowned cancer center out of the Boston area. So we are making sure that the folks that we are assigning our reviews to are at the top of their game. They're the experts in their field, and they all have practicing knowledge from a research and academic background. As I mentioned prior, that 80 to 90% of their time is focused on finding new therapeutics versus just using the standard course of care that may be recommended right now.
Yeah. So for those that haven't used Access Hope, that way we kind of give them an idea of how it looks like. Can you share a story or example of how Access Hope has made a difference in someone's cancer journey?
Absolutely. So what we oftentimes run across is, and this is across the U.S. as well, breast cancer is obviously very known across the U.S. as something that's afflicting many individuals. We do cover breast cancer reviews regardless of the stage. So whether it's stage 1, 2, 3, or 4, we will look in. We had a particular member who actually was diagnosed with a curable breast cancer. Early stage, was able to get the diagnosis early on enough where treatment was going to be effective. Initially, the diagnosis and treatment recommended chemotherapy. And I'm sure everybody listening or on this call understand that probably someone that you love, family, friend, member, everyone has been impacted by cancer one way or another. And chemotherapy in particular can really take a toll on the body when they're going through that. So this individual who was recommended chemotherapy, we were able to really review the medical records, and we went as far as looking at the genetic testing that was available and realized that the results showed she actually did not need chemotherapy. We were able to find a service and a procedure that had an equal cure rate to chemo. So there's going to be no drop off in the level of care. However, we were going to be able to avoid the toxicity, the complications, and the quality of life factors that come along with receiving chemotherapy. So what was great about this case is that we found an equal cure rate without using chemotherapy based on genetic testing, which typically a local oncologist might not look into to see what type of cancer that is. So we're able to really avert getting down that tolling path of going through chemotherapy.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because you just don't want to get something that's really, one, that you don't need, or two, that's not going to work out for you. And then three, that's going to make you feel really bad. So that's really good to hear. And then, you know, how you'd mentioned cancer is so common now, you know, we know someone that has had cancer before. Right. And so how it impacts not only that person, but family members as well. So just wanted to see, how does Access Hope support not just the patient, but also their caregivers and family members?
Yeah, this has been a big topic because we understand the support system around an individual and their cancer journey really is critical to good outcomes and the treatment overall. And what often does get overlooked is the stress that a diagnosis puts not only on the individual going through the treatment, but also on the loved ones around the patient. So Access Hope is available to all family members covered on the employee plan for services. And this includes second opinions, as well as that oncology nurse line that we have available for support, education, any general questions about treatment. So the other piece is the caregivers, right? Caregivers often get overlooked. It could be just as trying on them as it may be on the patient for various reasons. So for caregivers and other family members that have not been diagnosed but need their own support, that cancer support team that I had mentioned is available. As long as the benefits eligible individual is on the phone or at least initiated the call, we'll be able to talk with those caregivers as well and really walk through the trials and tribulations that come along with a loved one receiving the diagnosis and their ongoing treatment. So that aspect of our program is available. It will really come down to being able to communicate in tandem with the patient, at least starting the conversation. Once we've really established that connectivity with the caregiver, we'll be able to continue that ongoing.
Yeah, I like that. You know, there's options there for caregivers and family members to help their loved one. That's really good to hear. What message would you like to share with our employees today, just to wrap this up? With employees today who may be hesitant to reach out for help? I know there are times when you get a serious diagnosis like cancer that you may not want to reach out, or you may not be motivated because it's the, you know, may be something that may depress someone, or they just don't have the motivation to reach out for help.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, a lot of times we do see that folks are reluctant to reach out to learn what options are available. There is a lot of faith that is given to the treating oncologist. And by no means am I discrediting the community oncologists out there. They do a wonderful job of maintaining care, but they do have a lot on their plate, whether it's how many patients they're seeing, or when I mentioned that cancer care knowledge doubles every 73 days, there's just a lot to keep up with. So my message would really be that it never hurts to get a fresh set of eyes on your diagnosis and treatment plan. Do not worry about offending your oncologist by seeking out a second opinion. In fact, most of the oncologists that we've talked with and we've worked with encourage a second opinion, as they do understand their own limitations on keeping up with the rapidly changing treatments and standards of care. So they welcome the help and the support from peers in their field that are really going to help them understand what the best, latest, and greatest treatment plans are. Your treating oncologist will definitely welcome support and guidance. They'll take no offense. That's really one of the biggest hurdles that we see with our membership and with people with cancer diagnosis in general, is that they're worried about offending their treating oncologist. This program will expedite the second opinion process as well. So in a traditional setting, you'd have to go get your diagnostics and your medical records on a CD, a USB drive. And for the facilities that are really behind the times, it might be on a bunch of floppy disks. But we are able to do this all on your behalf, and we're able to streamline getting a second opinion. In a traditional setting, would be 90 to 120 days to go to one of the facilities that we work with just to get in the doors. And then if lastly, I guess I'll wrap it up with, if you are early in your journey or you've been in the fight for a long time, we're here to help. And please do not hesitate to take advantage of this program. BMC and Blue Cross and Blue Shield have done a wonderful job of making sure that all the tools necessary and the support needed for you and your family will be available when you need it.
All right. And from there, we'll go ahead and end it here. Bob, thank you so much. I learned a lot. And I really do hope employees and their families do call Blue Cross Blue Shield so they can have that help with Access Hope. Thank you for being here again.
No, thank you so much for having me. I would just like to be able to spread the word as much as I can, and I appreciate the opportunity.
A cancer diagnosis is never easy, but you don't have to face it alone. With the Cancer Services and Support Program from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas, you and your family get access to personalized care, expert guidance, and mental health support, all through your BMC health plan, at no additional cost. From diagnosis to post-treatment recovery, our health advocates and cancer care nurses help you understand your plan, prepare for treatment, manage side effects, and stay on track with follow-up care. To make things easier, explore the new Cancer Services and Support Hub, launched in 2025, where you'll find your benefits information, support resources, care options, and more, all in one place. From clinical trial info to emotional support, we're with you every step of the way. Reach out as soon as you get a cancer diagnosis. Call the number on the back of your member ID card and connect with your personal health advocate, available 24/7.
This is a BMC Academy production.
Now let's shift our focus on a condition that affects millions of lives every day, diabetes. Managing diabetes isn't just about blood sugar, it's about whole person care, from nutrition and medication to eye, foot, and dental health. To help us unpack this important topic, I'm joined by an expert from Teladoc Health, our trusted provider that's helping employees take control of their diabetes through personalized support and cutting-edge tools. Hi, Grace. Welcome to BMC's Health Podcast.
Hi, Daisy. Thank you so much for having me.
So glad you're here. So I want to start talking about diabetes, the impact on our society, and just wondering to see if you could help us with some current statistics on how many Americans are living with diabetes today.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, according to the American Diabetes Association, there's over 38 million Americans that have diabetes, or 1.2 million that have been diagnosed each year or being diagnosed each year. The alarming number is that approximately 8.7 million are undiagnosed. Now, I also want to call out that we're talking about diabetes, but there's different types of diabetes. So we're going to get into prediabetes. There's also type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, just to level set, is an autoimmune condition. So it's the body's immune system mistakenly attacking the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. And with type 2, it develops when the body becomes resistant to insulin. So I like to say, if you think of insulin as the key that unlocks the door for sugar to get into your cells, right? We all need energy to get into our cells to function. In type 1 diabetes, the body destroys the key-making factory, essentially, right? So you don't have any keys at all. In type 2 diabetes, you still have keys. They're still being manufactured, but the locks are getting a little rusty. So it's just not working as effectively.
Wow. Well, that's good to know that information. And just wondering, you know, there's millions of people that are undiagnosed and they don't know that they are living with diabetes. Could you let us know what the different age groups or communities are impacted by diabetes?
Yeah, so prevalence comes with age. So for type 2 diabetes, people aged, you know, 20s to 30s, much lower rates. But among those in the 40 to 50, the prevalence starts to jump. 60 plus, you have the higher rates. There has been an increasing incidence of type 2 diabetes in children and adolescents. So between the ages of 10 and 19, especially in certain racial and ethnic groups. So it's really important to know your risk factors, make sure you're seeing your provider, getting those preventative tests done, blood work done. And then when we think about type 1 diabetes, I think for a very long time, people have only thought about it as children, right? It was referred to as juvenile diabetes. But research shows that about half of newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes actually occurs in adults. So sometimes it happens in your 20s and your 30s and even later in life. And in fact, many adults are initially misdiagnosed with type 2 diabetes because providers don't always expect type 1 at that age.
Wow. So it really is an overall age group starting from, you know, it could be 10 to type 1. And then it just when you're older, it might be type 1 or type 2. So it's just a long range, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So again, just knowing your risk factors, being aware of, you know, some earlier risks, not just that are modifiable, also non-modifiable, right? So do you have a family history? If not, again, getting those screens, but also there's things that you can do for yourself, right? You can make sure that you're staying active and, you know, physically active, thinking about your diet. So yeah, we can get into a little bit more detail about that.
Yeah. It goes on to my next question anyway. So how does pre-diabetes, so before you actually get diabetes, you're diagnosed sometimes with pre-diabetes. And, you know, if you get your physical once a year, you usually get your A1C tested, which is a factor that shows, you know, for a duration of time, how much, I'm not the expert here, but what I know whenever I go get my preventive exam, the duration of how much glucose is in your blood level. And so how does prediabetes factor, and maybe you can explain what prediabetes is, and how does that factor into the overall picture, and what can we do to prevent the progression?
Yeah, that's right. So you're getting that hemoglobin A1C blood test and, you know, looking at those results. But prediabetes is the warning. So it's this opportunity. It's when your body's starting to become insulin resistant. So still producing insulin, not diagnosed with type 2, just, you know, starting to have some signs. About 98 million U.S. adults have prediabetes, and more than 80% don't know they have it. So without action, many people will progress to type 2 diabetes within about 5 years is what the research shows. But the good news is that there is prevention and that works. The CDC's diabetes prevention program, which Teladoc follows, it's a structured lifestyle program that helps to reduce the incidence of developing type 2 diabetes by 58%, by 71% for people 60 plus and older. And so, you know, this is lifestyle behavior modification. So again, making sure that you are being physically active. They actually recommend 150 minutes a week of activity and, you know, building muscle, as well as losing 5 to 7% of your weight. That really does significantly reduce the incidence of developing type 2 diabetes. So you have this great opportunity to prevent or delay.
That's great. That's all really good to hear whenever you can prevent something from becoming anything that's a big deal, because as I was preparing for this podcast, I did notice that once you do have the condition, there's a lot of things you have to look after, which we'll get into the whole body care later. But I mean, it's really good news for those. If you go get your preventive exam every year, that this is preventable.
That's right.
Now, let's shift over to treatment options and what innovations are out there. What are the latest treatment options available for managing diabetes currently?
Yeah, so I am on the board here in Kansas and Missouri for Breakthrough T1D, and they raise a lot of money and do a lot of research for those with type 1 diabetes. And there is a breakthrough, the biggest that's happened for people with type 1 diabetes. It's a therapy called Tzield. That's kind of the name for short. The official name is a lot harder to remember the pronunciation, but it's the first drug proven to delay the onset of type 1 diabetes by about 2 years on average. The key is screening. You know, type 1 diabetes, again, doesn't happen overnight. And so really testing for those early markers, they're called islet autoantibodies, and that can be done through different programs. And so, you know, just talking to your provider about that. But for type 2 diabetes, there is still lifestyle changes. Metformin is an oral medication that's been around forever, that's still very effective. And you may have heard of this other drug called a GLP-1, right? So there's Ozempic. It's been around for a very long time to help people manage their type 2 diabetes, not only lowering their hemoglobin A1C, but also having some great benefits when it comes to weight loss, heart and kidney risk. And so those GLP-1s for people with type 2 diabetes, you know, really have made a big difference. And then on the tech side, there's amazing insulin pumps that just keep getting smarter. They keep getting smaller. There's tubeless. There's continuous glucose monitors that, again, you know, is amazing technology that really helps people better manage their chronic condition. And then now even some that are available over the counter. So lots of great tools and resources to help people.
That's great to hear. And when we think about behavior health or, you know, well-being, mental health for people that do live with diabetes, what are some recommendations that you have? Do you see when people that live with diabetes, if their well-being is impacted? If so, what type of lifestyle coaching recommendations do you advise?
Yeah, absolutely. So behavioral health, lifestyle coaching, it's really central and it plays a major role. We offer coaching. It's unlimited, where members can connect with a coach. We're also providing the diabetes self-management education and support, which does consistently show it helps improve hemoglobin A1C. The American Diabetes Association's standards of care also call for routine screening for diabetes distress. So similar to depression, but, you know, its own category, but also depression, anxiety. There's a true fear of low blood sugars or hypoglycemia, disordered eating. So it's really important to address the mental load that people with whether they're insulin dependent or not, there's just a lot of daily decisions that diabetes demands and can be very stressful. And then pairing, you know, again, we talked about, or I mentioned the CGMs. So pairing that with coaching really does help connect those lifestyle behavior modifications. And so the data motivates people, but having that human side or that human connection can really help sustain and make meaningful changes.
And so for the lifestyle coaching at Teladoc, it is a real person. It's not like an AI coaching, lifestyle coaching. They're getting a real person. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Daisy. It's unlimited one-on-one telephonic coaching sessions where they can connect with a real life person. They can have that same person be their accountability partner throughout their journey if they'd like. They can connect once a week or once a month. It's really up to them. And then even in between those sessions, we have unlimited in-app messaging where they would get a thoughtful response from an actual coach and not a chatbot.
That's good. That's good. Because, you know, I would only imagine that you could do feel, especially when you're first diagnosed, you could feel overwhelmed by everything. So that's good to hear.
That's right.
All right. So with whole body care for diabetics, why is it important to not only, you know, go to your annual physical, but also get regular eye exams?
Yeah, so it's really important because it's all interrelated. So making sure that you're getting your annual eye exam, there's a thing called diabetic retinopathy that can occur. And so vision loss, especially when you have your blood sugars are running high consistently. So really important to get that annual check and just make sure that you're, you know, where you need to be, know your baseline. And if there is a concern, catching it early and staying on top of it.
That's good to hear. What should diabetics know about foot care and the risk of neuropathy or amputation?
Yeah, so it's really important that when you do go see your provider that they're putting eyes on your feet. So not just, you know, looking, but also touching, making sure that you're taking shoes and socks off every time so that they're checking for any potential signs or symptoms. If you have neuropathy or nerve damage, it's really especially important that you're getting your feet checked, but also that you're being careful at home and at your work, that you're wearing the proper shoes and preventing any injury. Oftentimes with neuropathy, you start to lose feeling. And with that can come even just a simple, innocent, you know, stepping on something at home and you know you think it's just a little wound and you start to take care of it. Unfortunately, what happens is it gets hard to treat and it can progress. And so that's where you get into the trouble of, you know, amputations, because you're, again, you're losing that feeling, that sense. And so it's especially important to make sure that you're, again, keeping your doctor informed and having those visual exams on your feet, but also just proper care at home.
Mm-hmm. And when we think about oral health, I've heard a lot, even those that don't live with diabetes, that it's really important, your oral health and how much it can impact other health factors. So especially for the diabetic community, why are regular dental cleanings so essential?
Yeah, again, it's just all so very interrelated. One affects the other. And so it's so important to make sure that you're getting that regular dental care, whether you're, you know, having any issues currently, but just again, for preventative measures, very important. So flossing, brushing at home, but then also seeing your dentist twice a year or more often if necessary. I know there's like a cardiovascular connection to that. You know, again, just like bleeding gums, hard to heal. So just making sure that you're staying on top of all of that. So much can happen when you're not doing those preventative measures. And that's just it. I think that, you know, if you are staying on top of those eye exams, if you're starting to feel any numbness and tingling in your hands or your feet, if you're starting to notice any oral changes, that you go see your provider and stay on top of that, because a lot of this can be prevented.
And going over to what Teladoc offers, and before we go there, I just want to let all of our BMCers know that our dental plan offers 3 preventive cleanings a year. So that's more than the norm. Usually it's considered preventive for 2 cleanings a year, but BMC does 1 additional, so you can get 3 cleanings a year. So I encourage everyone, even if you don't have diabetes, to go get your cleans, because they're not going to cost you anything. They're a preventive.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's awesome that you guys offer those 3. That's really
nice. Yes, yes. I try to go 3 times, but, you know, sometimes it's just a 2, but at least I know I have that extra.
That's right. Yeah, I think it's important because with diabetes, it just reduces your ability to fight infection. And so, you know, staying on top of that, especially if you have gum disease, that sort of thing. So that's really good.
Yes, yes. So going over back to Teladoc and your health diabetes management program, can you walk us through how Teladoc Health supports employees living with diabetes?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you enroll in the program, whether you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, you're going to receive a glucometer. So it's no out-of-pocket cost to you. It's going to come ready to go out of the box. They're cellular-enabled devices, meaning that you don't have to worry about Wi-Fi. You don't have to worry about trying to establish Bluetooth connection. It's a cellular chip that we provide. The glucometer is small. It's compact. And so when you check your blood sugar, it's going to automatically upload all of that data and that information into your account so you can view it and easily share it with your provider or your care team. And then it's unlimited supplies. So this is unlimited test strips, your lancets, your lancing device, everything you need to check your blood sugar, whether you're checking once or multiple times a day. It's provided to you. It has a built-in reminder, so it's going to send those supplies directly to your home. When you get low, it's going to send you a reminder, have you verify your home address, and send those supplies to you. Through the glucometer, there's obviously the result, right? When you check your blood sugar, you're gonna see where you are. And then we're going to give you some direction from the meter in real time. So letting you know you're in range, you're out of range. If you're low, how to treat. If you're high, giving you some suggestions. Positive reinforcement. And then we also have unique to Teladoc 24/7, 365 remote monitoring. So in real time, when you check your blood sugar, if it's extremely low or extremely high, so hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, we have our alert response specialists that are going to reach out to you to make sure that you understand how to properly treat your low blood sugar, offer some real-time support in that moment by a phone call or via a phone call. They can either, you know, also send an email or a text, whatever your preferred method of communication is, to support you. In addition, we sort of extend that safety net to our members, offering them the opportunity to set up what we call friends and family. So again, when they have that real-time out-of-range blood sugar, they can have a loved one also receive a text alert in real time so that they know to check in on their person or persons. And then there's just all the tools and education and support. So the ability to help empower you, to help increase your health literacy on what your hemoglobin A1C is, why that matters, how to help reach the target that you're trying to get to, so that you're preventing the risk and complications that come with diabetes, right? We talked about the nerve damage. There's cardiovascular risk factors. There's vision problems that can happen. So all working to empower you to prevent that, better manage, live a healthier life. We make it so you can log and track your meals. We provide food insights. We have so you can sync your activity tracker and encourage physical activity. Sleep is super important. So we provide you education and support on how to get good quality sleep. So really taking this holistic approach when it comes to better managing your diabetes.
I really like that. So that's a whole lot that you all offer, especially the part where you can add in family and friends, because there are some people that live on their own. And many times, you know, you don't have a roommate or a spouse there to help you if it's an emergency. So that, you know, phoning a friend or receiving those alerts, those of friends receiving those alerts is very crucial.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, going over with all the support that Teladoc provides to patients, how does that improve long-term? So with all the tools, resources, education, do you see improvements long-term?
Absolutely. So all of the things that I talked about really work together to turn short-term behavior into lasting outcomes and habits. So, you know, we have coaching that provides that accountability and problem solving. We have the education or content within the app. We have the monitoring with the glucose meter. If members have been prescribed a continuous glucose monitor, they can bring that into our platform and sync their CGM for an even more enhanced experience. And we're giving that real-time feedback, the education that really helps to build confidence and self-management skills, the food logging to connect the dots between, you know, what you eat and how your body responds. You can combine all of these tools to really help lower the hemoglobin A1C, achieve even, you know, weight loss as a result, improve time in range, risk reduction. And so as a result of that, just really having the outcomes that you're looking for, but that are sustainable outcomes through realistic lifestyle changes.
And what feedback have you received from users of the program? Any success stories you could share?
We have a lot of great member testimonials. One that sticks out to me is Irene. She is a Mexican-American woman who was in our program. And for a long time, she struggled because she was told, like, not to eat her rice or her beans or her tortillas, you know, which is can be really hard. And when you're trying to make changes, you want it to be realistic in order for it to stick and be sustainable, right? And you don't want to eliminate someone's cultural identity. And so our approach, I think people really appreciate, because we are looking at you as an individual and understand everyone's journey is going to be different. So taking different cultures, ethnicities, budgets into consideration. And so that one stands out to me. But I think a lot of people praise the no-cost features, the ability to get unlimited test strips and how easy it is to use our meter. It logs everything, so there's no manual entry needed. The coaches really shine on member feedback as well. People really appreciate the ability to have the coaches. We get a lot of compliments on the app. It's really easy to use and find everything under one roof, including mental health.
So to enroll in Teladoc, and if you're currently living with diabetes and you're not enrolled in Teladoc yet, please call your health advocate number listed on the back of your Blue Cross Blue Shield ID card. Grace, thank you for being here. So insightful.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.
Managing your blood sugar just got a whole lot easier and more affordable. Introducing the advanced blood glucose meter that comes with as many strips and lancets as you need, all paid for by BMC. That's right, all at no cost to you. Every check gives you personalized tips, and you can even set optional alerts to keep loved ones in the loop. Out of range? No worries. Real-time support is just a tap away. Need to share your progress? You can send a health summary report directly from your meter. And when it's time to restock, just reorder strips right from the device. Also, no more paper logbooks. Automatic uploads keep everything organized. Ready to take control? Join now by visiting teledochealth.com/register/bcbstx-health or call 800-835-2362 and use registration code bcbstx-health. Your health, your way, made simple.